the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey guys, this is Bobby Golden coming back at you with another episode of the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast. Like always, I have Dr. Jason Bond in the studio with me, as well as Dr. Ben Lawrence. And the topic for today is, y'all guessed it, what happened last week in agriculture. Okay, so we're going to take a minute to go through this. We're going to talk about where we're at today and how we move forward through the year with the recent EPA court ruling that is affecting soybean and cotton production in the United States. So Jason, being my old hand weed scientist in the room.
What did you think we were going to talk about?
It's not raining today. Cristobal has eased out of the system. We got about 4 inches here at Stoneville, and
well, we didn't get 4 inches out of the tropical storm.
We got 2 inches Friday, pre-tropical storm.
Out of a completely left field, nobody saw that coming.
I needed it because all my rice needed flushing, and that was $1 million rain for me.
Ben didn't have to water his corn?
Nope.
You remember when we were talking about watering corn the other day?
Yep.
Yeah, you don't need to water corn now.
No, it's doing fine. It needs to get some water off of it.
I think the bigger question right now is, how do we get tassel nitrogen out on that corn that's wet? And that's all the calls I've been getting this week outside of how do we put nitrogen fertilizer on muddy ground in a rice field. So we've been doing that for a long time.
I tell you, a big one that's going to come, you know, when the water gets off is, hey, the wind's blowing 45 miles an hour. When can I spray?
Well, speaking of spraying, why don't you go ahead and dive into the point at hand that we've got today.
Here is the timeline of the events as I know them. Wednesday night, I get a text.
About 7:45, wouldn't
it? Yeah, probably around 8 o'clock sometime. I get a text that's got a screen capture of a ruling from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Is that?
That is correct.
Okay. Which is located in California, that the labels for Ingenia, Extendamax with Vapor Grip, and Fexapan with Vapor Grip had been vacated. News to me. Did not see that coming. So got a lot of questions about it Wednesday night and then into Thursday morning. No word from EPA. And so basically nothing happened on Thursday and Friday in that arena. So, you know, a lot of conversations went on, but no action to my knowledge. Friday, there was a press release from EPA that basically said their intentions were to respond to it. Yesterday, the EPA released their, basically, I guess what amounts to a response to the ruling from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which basically says that at the local retail level, it can know those products, though, and it only applies to those three. So keep that in mind. This is only applying to Ingenia, Extendamax, and Fexapan. The local outlets can no longer sell those products, and that growers that possessed the product at the time of the court ruling could make applications through July 31st of this year.
So basically, if you pre-purchased all your product, you're good till July 31st.
The statement said if it was in your possession on June 3rd, you could apply it through July 31st. You know, I'm not going to read more into it than what it is. That's what it said.
Okay, so we've got a lot of late beans in the state of Mississippi. All this rain we've had, just another bullet at 2020 with this coming at us. But all this rain, a lot of our beans were planted later. We didn't get as many in that April window. So with that July 31st deadline, that's going to leave a lot of beans out there that need to be sprayed when we can no longer use those three products you mentioned.
Well, I don't know if we'll be spraying any. I don't know if our, even the beans, and we do have some acres that either haven't come up yet because they were planted in dry dirt, or, you know, hadn't been planted yet because it was too dry to plant. And then of course we got places in the state that, you know, were too wet. So we got beans that are scattered out full range of growth stages.
And a couple replants.
But I don't know that we're going to have any that are going to need to be treated, you know, after the 31st of July.
Well, I was just thinking.
You're talking about, you know, 55, you know, 50, 55 days from now.
So we're wet right now on a lot of this buckshot ground that we were waiting to get some type of water on. I know some people were watering up in anticipation of planting. We're probably a good 6 to 7 days from getting in. I'm not trying to refute your point. I'm just saying if you're in a normal double crop window, those beans aren't going to lap as fast as they would have in a normal scenario. So there could be a possibility.
I mean, it's possible, but I still think it's unlikely. You know, unless it's wide row dry land beans, you know, that are not going to grow off well. I mean, I think in 50 days, you're going to have a crop that you've got your weed control inputs into it. So, Ben, why don't you talk a little bit about soybeans, and then I'll hit on the cotton for a minute, because cotton is right in the middle of this thing too. So give us the scenarios that are out there, you know, for soybeans as far as growth stages, and then the options for weed control with those different growth stages.
Well, like Jason kind of mentioned, you know, our bean crops kind of all over the board. You've seen, you know, driving, I live in southern Bolivar County, and it takes me about a 23-minute drive to get to work and see stuff from just in that narrow window that's from barely coming up to beans that are almost lapped, and they started watering last week. Some of those guys, a lot of their weed control, they're already kind of ahead of the game, or not ahead of the game, but on time, whereas some of those beans are looking at their V3 applications, if you wanted to put it in a category of where that timing lies. So if we think back to 2015 or so, we relied heavily on PPO products, Reflex, Prefig, and overlapping residual herbicides that are still good viable control options for Palmer amaranth.
All right, I think two important points to think about. You mentioned Reflex, so there's a lot of different products that contain fumesafen, which is the active ingredient in Reflex. There's as much Prefix as anything else that's applied, and that's a premix of fumesafen and S-metolachlor, which is dual magnum. But then a lot of the retail folks have their own versions of those products. So the total for the year is 0.375 pounds of active ingredient, which in the case of Reflex is a pint and a half. Big thing to remember, and we've probably forgotten about this, but about 10 years ago, this was a really big deal for us. The rotation interval to grass crops after an application of anything with fumesafen in it is 10 months.
That's kind of not necessarily a wrench in your gearbox, but the majority of the delta, or a good portion right here close to Washington County, got anywhere from 2 to 4 inches. And if we were to get another system and push us later in these applications, that can make a difference on what your rotation plans were for next year.
So, I mean, you're looking at, you know, just Bobby mentioned earlier, maybe 6 or 7 days before you get back in. You know, just say you make an application next Monday, which will be, what, the 15th?
Correct.
Then you're looking at April 15 corn, which we got a lot of April 15 corn.
But not ideal.
Yeah, not preference.
Preference, maybe.
For sure. So definitely keep that in mind if you are in a situation where you have to use one of these products with fumesafen rather than dicamba. If you had planned on using one of those three dicamba products, that, you know, keep in mind what your rotation might be for 2021.
Or rice. I can't remember what.
Yeah, and rice. Rice falls in that same category. The years where we've had carryover with fumesafen, we generally hadn't seen it on rice that much. As a rule, you know, our rice is on heavier textured soil, which you see carry over less often on than the sandier soil. But then, too, I just, you know, personally, I think rice is less susceptible to it than corn is. In the years where we saw it with corn, we had some really mild winters and then combined with really dry conditions through the winter months. You know, that was in 2010 and 2011. And I don't know if any of us remember what dry winter looks like now, because it's been several years since we had one. The other options in beans, the Liberty Link GT27 beans are out there. I don't know. I don't have any idea what kind of volume.
Yeah, I don't either.
We have on those. So that would give you the option of spraying glyphosate or Liberty or the other products that contain glufosinate, which is the active ingredient in Liberty. Those varieties are an option. Those products are an option on those soybeans if you had chosen to plant one of those. My impression is that the overwhelming majority of our crop is Xtend varieties. I don't have any idea what the percentage would be.
Yeah, I don't either. And talking to Trent this morning, I can't remember what he
said. 2 million acres.
Yeah, had the trait.
Had the trait. Not 2 million acres treated or intended to treat, but 2 million acres that contained the trait.
What's the chance that it has the trait and doesn't get treated?
I think it depends on where you're standing, Bobby. We're certainly treating a higher percentage of the crop with the dicamba products in 2020, our intentions were, than 2017, year one of the launch, just as it's become more mainstream and more people have done it and they have their system down. And so I know we're treating a higher percentage, but I don't feel like we're treating 100% of those acres yet. And I know we're not, because everybody knows some guys that have at least fields, if not entire farms, that for whatever reason, those applications are just not it's not conducive to being treated with those products, whether it's proximity to towns or various other things. Related to cotton, a lot of the same things apply to cotton. And I feel like our cotton crop, we're kind of, and not having laid eyes on every area of the state, but the cotton that I see kind of feels like we're about halfway on weed control. Feels like a lot of it's been sprayed once. Some of it certainly has been sprayed twice, depending on planting date. But I feel like a big category is one post-emergence application has been made, intending on making a second post-emergence application of whatever the treatment of choice is, and then proceed on hopefully to canopy closure. So in the absence of dicamba, or in the absence of Ingenia, Fexapan, and Xtendimax, the only other post-emergence option that you really have that's effective on Palmer amaranth is Liberty. And so I think that Liberty fits well in the timing that most of our cotton's at right now. If it does have already has one application of one of those dicamba products on it, then a follow-up application with Liberty is going to be a pretty strong treatment. And then if by some chance it has not been treated post-emergence and there's a palm amaranth problem, then two applications of Liberty has performed well. Then we do have some Enlist cotton that's being grown in the state. So obviously that technology is available, and the products that are labeled for it could be used as well.
So since I'm having to do stuff a little bit differently, or may have to do stuff a little bit differently depending on where my cotton crop is and what options I have available to me, if I'm in that where I've had one application of one of those dicamba products out, and now I'm having to roll my second application to Liberty, where's my holes? What am I missing? What do I need to add to the tank?
I don't know if there are additions to the tank, not necessarily. If you're thinking about surfactants, Liberty is a loaded formulation, and the other products that are glufosinate are as well. I'm thinking about Interline specifically. Those have a surfactant loaded in the formulation, like most of our glyphosate formulations do. So nothing there. A residual for sure. Something like Dual Magnum or the other products that fall into that category of early post-emergence over-the-top residual for cotton. Probably don't want to do, Liberty, Dual, and an insecticide. That can get a little bit, hot, so to speak. You can get some injury from three-way combinations. And that, a lot of that is going to, hinge on the weather and choice of insecticide, because some of those, they carry some phytotoxicity, with them to start with. And then you put it, with the oil that most of the formulations of Montoloclore and Dual, are oil-based formulations, and then the surfactants in the Liberty, and you can get, pretty hot on the crop. The other thing to think about, Bobby, is the actual application. If your sprayer is set up to spray dicamba and you decide that you need to make an application of Liberty, you're going to have to reset up the sprayer, specifically the nozzles. You need a medium droplet size for application of Liberty, whereas, the manufacturers recommend an ultra coarse very coarse to ultra coarse. I don't remember the exact categories for those applications of dicamba. So that definitely would need to be addressed to make a good application of Liberty. And then, you know, water volume too. You know, I like Liberty and in 15 gallons of water. Not everyone can do that, but it needs to be in as much water volume as is practical.
Going back to a contact herbicide, and we got to remember how to use one.
Certainly, it's a contact herbicide. There's no, you know, real rotation restrictions related to that. You know, so 2021, there shouldn't be any changes necessarily there. You know, the other things, you know, just real extreme things you can think about, you know, row hoods with some really nasty treatments coming under row hoods that are labeled, they're labeled treatments. You know, Gramoxone is labeled under hoods in cotton. I don't know that anybody really wants to do that, but I mean, there may be situations where it's necessary, and it is a legal treatment. I would certainly think about, you know, a good lay-by treatment if the operation is set up for a lay-by treatment. We just, in the last few years, those, you know, post-directed or hooded applications have become the exception rather than the rule. And all that would apply, you know, in soy, you know, wide row soybeans too, you know, where hoods can physically fit, you know, between the rows. You know, there's some hooded treatments that are available in soybean as well.
So how's Liberty doing tea weeds?
Well, that's a good question. One I'm not necessarily prepared to answer. You know, the tea weed thing, man, and I'm not dodging your question. I honestly don't know. I would expect it does well, because here's the thing. We didn't find tea weeds. These tea weeds have always been here, and by we call them tea weeds. You know, prickly cider is the appropriate common name for them. But, yeah, they've been a real problem on our Xtend acres, because Roundup tends to be, you know, if you think about weed control guide categories, Roundup's probably fair, and dicamba's probably poor to fair, and so you get fair. But they didn't come out of nowhere. So pre-Xtend technology, we were controlling them on these acres with something. In soybean, the big thing that we were using that we're not using now is fumescifin. So reflex, prefix, all of those. It's not rated real high in the weed control guide, but obviously we killed some with it that we weren't expecting to. My problem with it, and the reason I can't answer your question specifically to Liberty, is in our weed control plots, we've always had a hard time growing them. You know, we've bought seed, you know, overseeded our plots with them. They tend to come up real late. They usually come up after we sprayed our post-emergence treatment, so I just don't have a really good feel for how a lot of those treatments perform on them. We actually got several studies out this year specifically for that species. So, I mean, Liberty's a broadleaf herbicide, and I've never gone and looked at tea weeds / prickly cider in a Liberty Link field before, so put those together, and I would expect that it does pretty well on it. Ben, before we wrap up, what are some other, you know, possibilities of things that we might expect to see in soybean weed control in the absence of, you know, these three dicamba products?
You know, as we mentioned earlier, we kind of harp back on the PPO products. And, you know, several years ago, I can't remember the first time we got a call about it, was, you know, my PPOs aren't working on pig weeds. Are they resistant?
2015.
Yeah.
Cahoma County. I remember it well.
That is to be expected, that we're probably going to, I don't want to use the term, you know, blow up a bunch of it, but you're liable to see more classifications of PPO resistance or suspected resistance across the Delta, just because I don't, you know, with dicamba products, controlling them or masking the level of PPO resistance, you know, if that's taken out of the system and we're relying more heavily on those PPO products, that is a potential issue that people should be aware of. Because it's not going to be a new issue. I mean, it's been going on for, well, like we just said, 2015 till, you know, so it's had almost 5 years to manifest into something bigger.
Yeah, and it doesn't go away. I mean,
No, it doesn't.
If we didn't use Roundup for 7 or 8 years and then we sprayed straight Roundup on palmer amaranth,
it would look the same.
Yeah, we would still have resistant palmer amaranth. So I guess, you know, to wrap this up, this has definitely been a monkey wrench in a lot of folks' plan, and you know, we We just want to say that we're here for you, and whatever we can do to help you, you know, by all means, you know, give us a call, and we will help you adjust your herbicide program to fit these new rules that we're operating under.
If y'all have any more questions, any comments, any concerns, anything you want to get off your chest, or just call and ask how we can help you, you know, what's another wrench in the year of 2020? So,
nothing surprises me at this point.
You're right about that. All we can say is we're going to do what we always do. We're going to keep on keeping on, because it never fails. However many wrenches get thrown in it, we always make a crop.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.